The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It is me, or is it? It is I. I don't know. George Brockler with you here on 710 KNUS. Do you remember back in 2016 when President Trump was running, and one of the things he said was, "We're going to win so much, you're going to get sick of winning." I think some of that must have spilled over on top of the new portions of city council here in Aurora, along with the mayor, because it feels like we should have a regularly scheduled appearance by our next guest to describe the next awesome stuff they're doing on behalf of Colorado's, I think it's third most populous city, and one that is just blazing trails everywhere. To join us just a week later from his last awesome appearance is City Councilman Dustin Zvonik. Dustin, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, I can't pick up the paper anymore or look on Twitter without seeing some other thing that you and Danielle and the Beard and all of you guys have gotten together to push forward. And I should really expand it, because some of these things are passing through city council 10 to 0, which is insane, given that you have people on there who are the polar opposite ideology-wise. How are you doing this?
Yeah, I think the three of us that you just mentioned, Danielle, Steve, and I, when we came onto council, we all had the same idea that Aurora has tons of potential. We got elected to get things done. And thankfully, we had some other colleagues, our mayor pro tem, Francois Bergen, who's been on council for 7 years now, and has been a great mentor to all of us, the newbies on council. And we all just, after the election, we said, we have an opportunity to really push the dial and get things done. And something that I believe that we need more of, not just in Aurora, but in Colorado and across the country, are conservatives who are not just going to stand up and fight against the bad stuff. We need that. And we need conservatives who are going to govern, who are going to do things. And the truth is, when you start pushing the policies that we believe in, they have really broad appeal. And so sometimes we fight over things, especially on the criminal justice side. But a lot of these ideas are good conservative policy that are going to make Aurora a more business-friendly city. But it's hard for our colleagues on the left to argue with them, and so we're able to get 10-0 votes on some of these things.
What were the last couple 10-0 votes that you've had?
The most recent one was the elimination of the tax on government fees. I think this is what – I believe we talked about this the last time.
Yep, we did.
I was on. And that is, after the new delivery fee was implemented that the state legislature and Governor Polis put into place, it came to my attention that municipal governments then tax that fee. So I ran an ordinance that would exempt city sales tax from any government fee or any government fee from city sales tax. I expected a little bit of resistance only because it cost, and again, I'm using my air quotes, my Dr. Evil air quotes,
yeah.
It cost the city government a little over $200,000 a year for us to exempt government fees from then being taxed. But to my surprise, it passed this past Monday night unanimously.
Wow. There's something else I had teased talking with you about last time you were on, and I think you've made some real progress with this, and that is this red tape roundup that you had campaigned on, this idea that, listen, we're going to go in and lay waste to a whole bunch of unnecessary regulations that are holding back business. What have you done? And I saw a website. I think you shot me a link to a website. Pretty awesome. What is that website?
Yeah, so it's on our regular website, which is auroragov.org, but the sub-site is Here for Business, Aurora, Here for Business. And this goes back to, during my campaign, I knocked on a whole lot of doors to talk to citizens and heard a lot about their concerns about crime and what they wanted city council to focus on. The other thing that I spent a lot of time doing was sitting down with business leaders and owners, big businesses, small businesses, everything in between. And I'd go in with the notepad and I'd say, what are things that Aurora could be doing better to become more business friendly? And especially those businesses that operate in multiple municipalities, because I wanted that contrast. What are things that we do here that, or that you see in other municipalities that we could do better? And I got an earful. And so I, you know, throughout the campaign, I decided that if I got elected, I wanted to create, and I called it at the time the Red Tape Roundup. It ended up being the Red Tape Reduction ad hoc committee. And the idea was
Roundup sounds fun.
Series of hearings. It does sound funner, and but this is you know, there was some confusion apparently about it. Anyhow, I decided to host a series of hearings early in the year with a lot of those same businesses that I heard from in the campaign, and then some additional. And I wanted them to tell the same story in a public forum that they were telling me in these private meetings throughout the campaign. And they came to us with a lot of suggestions, a lot of ideas and things that we could do. Because the idea was, what are rules and regulations, taxes and fees, or city processes that could be reformed, eliminated, improved in a way that would make Aurora a better place to do business? And this, again, coming full circle, but I think a conversation that you've heard me, I've had on this show a bunch of times, is that I think the city has so much potential to be a leader in economic development and job creation for the region and for the state of Colorado. But to do that, you have to create the environment that allows, businesses to thrive here, that is inviting for when we're out there trying to recruit businesses from whether it's California or Illinois or wherever they want to leave because of higher taxes and more regulations. When they look to Colorado, we want them to look to Aurora because we have a bunch of undeveloped land around the third busiest airport in the world. You know, we have the Anschutz Medical Campus. We have Buckley Space Force Base. We have a lot of assets that make this a great place to do business, but there were little things that I believe that we could improve on, and that's what this red tape reduction ad hoc committee really focused on.
We're talking with Dustin Zvonik, Aurora City Councilman. Two things that you brought up in that answer that I want to address. One is you mentioned Buckley Space Force Base.
Space Force!
And there's something that has come out in the news regarding a budget proposal by President Biden that could have a negative impact on Buckley. What is that?
Yeah, there is a reduction in the Biden defense budget of the F-35 program. And, you know, the F-35 has long been considered the right replacement for the F-16s, which we have at Buckley currently. Buckley is a $1.3 billion contributor to our economy. And not to mention, when you look at the F-35 program, the number of suppliers, the number of direct jobs, the total economic impact that it could and does have already, the reduction in the Biden budget could have a significant impact on the local economy and on Buckley Space Force Base, which, again, to me is a key pillar to the Aurora economy, but frankly, to the regional, to the entire Front Range region in Colorado.
I didn't mention this to you previously, but the former commander out there at Buckley, and every year folks should know there is a State of the Base luncheon, and it's well attended by everybody, business leaders, community leaders, and of course elected officials. And the guy who was the commander before this current one, he is now a general who plays a significant role in space, in the Space Force. I saw him speak at War College that I just got done with a couple weeks ago, and I went up to him afterwards, much to the concern and chagrin of the other people in charge. And I said, hey, great to see you again. I saw you at this thing. And he goes, okay, good to see you. I said, pretty pleased with sugar on top. Keep the F-35 thing going at Buckley. So I made our little lobbying pitch there on behalf of Aurora directly to a man who has some impact at the Pentagon on this decision. I want to get to something else that you had mentioned, and that is the leadership role that Aurora plays. Now, when you had come on to describe this plan, this ordinance that's going into effect that would in essence say to car thieves, and I know this is going to sound so crazy, you're going to go to jail in Aurora if you steal cars. That's cutting edge thinking right there. But my thought was, as this thing rolls out and we see crime start to drop, specifically in the car theft area, more and more cities are going to follow suit and want to do this. And sure enough, we've already started to hear other cities starting to inquire, what's Aurora doing, how they're doing it. But this has actually taken root in other parts of governance as well, not just the crime. Other cities are starting to follow Aurora's suit. Talk about that area.
Yeah, so the other one was the tax on fees. That's just this past week, we saw Denver, Colorado Springs, and Castle Pines all move forward with ordinances that would exempt those new government fees and any government fees from municipal sales tax. And then we talked, I believe, last time about the water ordinance and the water conservation ordinance, which again passed 10-0 this past week. Somewhat surprising to me that it was a unanimous vote, but nevertheless, I believe, a necessary step that we took, and we've already had a number of cities. I believe Castle Rock is probably not far behind in terms of doing something very similar. So I think that what we want to do is continue to just push forward, move the needle to govern in a responsible, conservative fashion, and show people that, you know, this is why I think local government is so important, is that, one, you can actually get things done, and the impacts that it has on our community, on our city, are far-reaching, because, as you point out, other cities are going to start doing this. I was actually having a conversation recently with a friend who works for Denver in the mayor's office about things that we could work on together. And I think, you know, one of the places that we agree is the need to really address crime. They're struggling with it. You read about, you know, the challenges Denver has. Aurora has some challenges. We share a lot of the border that we share.
Yeah, the criminals don't care where the border is for purposes of some of this violent crime stuff. They drift back and forth. We're going to find out if they know where Aurora is based on car theft. But some of this crime just bleeds over everywhere.
That's right. And so we're going to, and we recognize that a lot of the challenges that we have in with regards to crime stem from state laws. And what I hope to do going into the new legislative session, where I hope we have a different composition of the legislature, and it'd be great to have a new governor in there that actually cares about reducing crime. I want to work with other cities and partner with them going into the new year and say, we need to push back for a state, or push on the legislature and the governor for a statewide solution to many of these, you know, criminal justice reform bills that they passed in previous years that are having a negative impact on our communities.
Well, the thing I worry about for Aurora and any other city out there who's interested in taking proactive steps to address public safety in their community, because the state is asleep at the wheel here, is that the state, if there isn't some change of control of one of the houses of the legislature or the governor or both, you're going to see an effort after this election cycle to trim back municipalities' ability to do things like change the penalty for car theft or something like that, because once again, you're acting in contravention of the prevailing progressive ideology out there that is much more offender focused than public safety focused. Have you heard anything like that?
I haven't, but you think about how counter that would be to, so in a couple of instances, whether it's with oil and gas regulation or gun regulations, the state allows the cities to become more restrictive. And what you're suggesting is that the state might say, you can become more restrictive in these two areas, but in this area, you have to only maybe less restrictive.
Well, and they've done that with abortion, right? They've said abortion across the state, whether you agree or disagree, they're like, you can have one standard piece.
Yeah. And I think that the more they try to chip away at, especially in Colorado, we have what are known as, you know, home rule cities, and Aurora is one of them. There's 68 home rule cities. I believe you would see a major pushback from municipalities, and, you know, probably led by the Colorado Municipal League to push back on our state legislature if they tried to infringe further on our ability to do the things that we can do and should be doing in order to keep our community safe.
What's next, man? I feel like I should just book you right now for next Friday for whatever else it is you guys accomplish on Monday nights. What's next?
Yeah, look, we still have a lot of work to do on with regards to public safety, you know, and I'm thankful to have Chief Oates, you know, back and really putting our police department in a posture where they're doing proactive policing and going after crime. But, you know, retail theft is still a major issue. We still have far too much youth violence and you know, shootings throughout our community. We have to continue to focus on that, because if we're going to reach the potential that I believe that the city has economically, we have to be a city that is both perceived as safe and is in fact safe. So that is going to be work that we're going to continue to do. And I know for me personally, I want to continue to push, you know, some of these big assets that we have, specifically, you know, the Anschutz Medical Campus to reach its potential. There's a lot that I think the city can do from an infrastructure standpoint. And again, cutting some red tape and allowing that campus to grow and become Aurora Skyline and become, you know, one of the top life science campuses, not just in the country, but frankly in the world. These are the things that I hope we can continue to work on. And I know my colleagues are committed to continuing to just keep moving forward.
You know, listen, medical campus, Space Force Base, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about what's important here. And that is the Broncos' new ownership is officially in place. It is now time for you to schedule a meeting and say, how do we get you all out to Aurora? When does that happen?
I am ready for that conversation. I read early on that the ownership group wanted to, you know, it said something about wanting to host a Super Bowl. But, of course, that requires a bigger stadium, one that could be covered, even if it's just open and closed. We have a lot of land available out by the Gaylord, right next to, you know, as I mentioned, the third busiest airport in the world. I would love to see the Denver Broncos' new home right here in Aurora, and we would welcome them. So I would be happy to have that conversation with whoever needs to hear it.
Yeah, once that meeting is set up, I presume the mayor will be involved too. If you guys need someone to drive you there and keep the coffee warm, I'd love to be in that room because that is going to be a magical moment.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine that you know, if Denver, if they want to rebuild a stadium, Denver will be as welcoming as the city of Aurora will be.
That's true. Well, what are they going to do? Ilitch's has already spoken for. I mean, they got no place to really go with that. This is exciting times ahead for Aurora. And frankly, as Aurora goes, I think so go so much, so many more municipalities. We're starting to see that. Thanks for taking time out of your busy morning. Dustin Zvonik, city councilman for Aurora. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, that was great. I imagine we're going to hear a lot more from Dustin as Aurora continues to push forward. Hell, we'll get out there and reach out to Danielle and Steve the Beard as well. We've had the mayor on too. Aurora, I'm telling you, if they can land that stadium, can you imagine? That would be seismic. Denver would, they'd be in panic mode if they lost one of the major franchises. Here's what I want to do is to let you know that the next voice that you're going to hear on our phone lines isn't going to be one of the awesome callers that we have that come in to chime in on opinions about this, that, or the other. It's going to be another voice we heard just earlier this week because the guy can't stop hitting print on a whole bunch of stories that continue to pull back the curtain on the judicial branch, and that's David Magoya from the Denver Gazette. Do you remember that day earlier this week where I said, hey, two stories hit today, how many tomorrow? And he laughed. Because that day, two more stories hit, and there have been more stories since, and we're going to get updated on all that stuff because it's super important. I, though, however, want to tell you about Bingo Reverse Mortgage. They are new advertisers for the show, and I'm glad they are because what they're going to do for you and for me is to demystify what a reverse mortgage is. How does it work? Phenomenal team out there. Now, listen, this isn't something that applies to everybody listening, only to those over the age of 55. If you're in that category, and I'm not yet, but I'm getting dangerously close. A reverse mortgage alone allows you to convert equity in your home, which is going to have to have exploded over the last few years. I mean, housing values have just gone nuts, into cash, or you can use it to purchase a home. Reverse mortgage can be your ace in the hole when it comes to actually retiring instead of just dreaming of retirement. And in that way, Bingo Reverse Mortgage is actually saving the American retirement. The benefits to you are incredible, and you got to call them to find out. They can put more money in your pocket for, I don't know, living expenses to take the edge off of this incredible inflation we're experiencing or to give you more security in your retirement. Get that safety net you deserve. Call the Bingo team at Prepare to Copy, 720-541-5545, 720-541-5545. If you tell them that George sent you, you get a free appraisal reimbursed at closing, a $750 value. You can also visit them at bingoreversemortgage.com, bingoreversemortgage.com. Equal housing lender, call 720-541-5545 for cost information and conditions. Licensed in Colorado, NMLS, ID number 226-8418. When we come back, David Magoya from the Gazette. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Little Robert Plant and the boys from LZ, George Brockler with you here on 710 KNUS. My thanks to Dustin Zvonik, Aurora City Councilman, for updating us on the great work that they're doing out there, kind of cutting-edge stuff that people are starting to follow. Here's someone else you should follow doing cutting-edge work, and that's David Magoya with the Denver Gazette. If you're getting tired of winning, then you don't want to listen to this next interview because we are getting caught up again. I think we just talked to you yesterday or something about two.
Last couple of days. Yeah.
It was the last couple of days. And I joked with you about at the time you had two stories go out the day before. And I said, what are you going to do? Two more today? You laughed and poo-pooed it. And then there were two more that day. I mean, first, are you the undead? But two, what is going on here that this thing, it's just really picking up momentum.
It happens on a dime around here. You know, that's the news cycle, George. You know that. I mean, things come and you got to write about them at the moment. And that particular one, I mean, you know, we had Chris Ryan, who was the guy that came forward, the former state court administrator, came forward about this existence of this memo and this whole scandal and everything that's come from it. Chris appeared before the interim legislative committee that's examining whether to change the judicial discipline process in our state. And he testified. It was his first public comments since he and I, you know, interviewed with me two years ago. So, you know, we got a hold of his comments and he had a prepared statement. So I was able to kind of pull from that pretty quickly and get it out there. Frankly, I thought that Chris's testimony before the committee was superb. I
mean,
he really stood firm.
Tell us what he revealed.
Well, you know, Chris took a pretty, there were a couple of investigations. I should go back a little bit. A couple of investigations that the Judicial Department hired out to take a look at this memo and discuss what was in it, the allegation of a quid pro quo contract for silence. And Chris, you know, got, it was determined by one of these investigators, the Bob Troyer Group, former U.S. attorney here in Colorado, as you well know.
Yep.
And their investigation, even though they didn't speak to any of the principals, they never spoke to Chris Ryan. They didn't speak to Mindy Macias, who was the former chief of staff at the Judicial Department who received this contract. She was being fired over some financial irregularities. And as the allegation goes, she was going to sue for sex discrimination and lay out in her lawsuit all this type of judicial misconduct that's happened over the years. Some of it, they claim, because you would know, because judicial is pretty secret, but her claim was that it had gone unpunished, when in fact it was lightly punished, and it was to be used as examples of, you know, look at all this misconduct you let slide by, and here you're firing me over some falsified receipts. So, and then the third one, of course, is the author of this memo, and that was Eric Brown, who was the human resources director at the time. So Bob Troyer Group determines in its investigation that Chris Ryan had lied to everybody. There was no quid pro contract, that Chief Justice Coates never waved his arms during the reading of this memo. And
who said
and
this? Said, this was the Troyer report?
Yeah, this was the Troyer report. And that Chris Ryan had, you know, made this all up. And none of it was true, et cetera. There was no quid pro quo contract. There was a lot of misbehavior and misconduct and a lot of dumb stuff that happened, but, you know, nothing as serious as what Chris was alleging. So Chris finally stepped forward and in committee this week and laid it on the line and said, you know what, I stand firm on all my allegations. I did everything by the book that my bosses told me to do. I never did anything on my own. But he stayed, rather than going point for point against the Troyer Group, he quite smartly, I think, stayed in the confines of what the committee is looking at, and that's changing the process of judicial discipline. And Chris had a number of thoughts and ideas about that. But the bottom line is he said, you know, judicial controlled all those investigations. They redacted, they prevented information from getting out, they determined what information was to be provided to those investigators, and they towed the line of their original explanation at the beginning of all this that nothing bad happened.
Now, he also goes out of his way to talk about, listen, I have nothing to gain from doing this, from coming out here. In fact, here's the quote from your article. Take a moment to ask yourself what I have to gain from any of this, Ryan said. I'm an unemployed 53-year-old with zero prospects for the future, given the results that come from a Google search of my name. I no longer have the ability to serve the public and work in the field of public policy, which gave my career meaning. That's kind of compelling. I don't know what this guy gets out of it. I mean, I think at one point and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, he felt like he was going to be the scapegoat for a lot of what took place. And in part, he was like, hang on, whatever my level of responsibility is, as you pointed out, I never did anything in the dark. I never did anything behind anyone's back. This was all well known and approved.
Back from the beginning, when I first spoke with Chris, which when I that happened in December of 2020, the story didn't appear until February 2021 about the existence of this memo and this allegation of contract for silence. And I attempted, you know, when Chris met with me, it was to discuss this in this state auditor's report that took a look at some of the shenanigans that were going on over at the state court administrator's office. And I was merely trying to get Chris's reaction to that report, which essentially laid everything at his feet. All the ills and problems there were his creation. When I first spoke with Chris and he brought up this memo, it was an aside to a litany of response that he had to this audit. So Chris didn't come to me and say, hey, let me tell you about this memo and whatnot. It didn't go like that. It was sort of a bullet point on a second page of bullet points that Chris had before him when we were speaking. So I went back over it because that caught my ear. And Chris made it very clear to me. Let me make it perfectly clear. They know exactly why that contract was put forth. Precisely why. And I asked him what was in that memo, and he said, I'm not going to tell you. And I said, Chris, I need to kind of get an idea what's in that thing. He said, I will not tell you. I lost my job protecting that thing. And I said, okay, can you sort of characterize it for me? And then we quoted in the story, and he said, you know, a bunch of ills and misdeeds and things like that. I think the word was reprehensible stuff or disgusting stuff, something like that. Yeah, and he was talking about like the hairy chested judge. Yeah, we all know about that guy. And Chris was adamant. He would not tell me about that, what was in it. So now we're sort of stuck as a reporter in a very odd area because we have the credibility of a guy. I didn't know Chris very well, but he's the state court administrator. I had been. That's the number one civilian position in the state.
It's big.
How credible was he in coming forth? He had resigned 2 years earlier or a year earlier when I broke the story about the contract. We knew the contract existed. We just didn't know why the contract had occurred. And I hadn't figured that out until Chris laid it out for me. So now we need to kind of prove that this memo actually exists. And through the Open Records Act of the Judicial Department, because you know they don't fall into CORA, your favorite subject, George.
Right.
and they denied me this memo. And I've told this story before, I think, with you. They denied the memo that I could have it. They said you can't have it. So at that stage of the game, I knew emphatically that the memo existed because I was very particular in my request.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And at that stage of the game, we had to decide. I was with the Denver Post at the time. We had to decide as a publication, do we believe Chris? We know the memo exists. We, you know, because I was very specific about it. Who was at this meeting? And I couldn't give any details about the memo because I didn't know. And now we have to kind of decide as a publication, do we go forth with this? So there was a lot of credibility checking going on. I was talking to a lot of people who knew Chris, and I wanted to know, is this guy up and up? Is he trustworthy? Is he somebody you can believe at the professional level? And everything came back thumbs up. I mean, everything. And at that stage, we said, okay, let's go. And we did. And don't forget, Judicial would not let us have that memo. And we attempted through our attorney to get it. And they denied us over and again. You cannot have this document. Then we publish our story. And within 3 days, that's when the Judicial Department comes out, the Supreme Court, and releases the memo publicly. What I didn't know until about 8 or 10 months later was that two of the justices who were deposed in another case had said that they released that memo because they thought Chris Ryan had already given it to me. He didn't. He didn't even have it, actually.
Goodness.
He turned it over to their lawyers.
That's pretty damning, too, man, that they...
So now, and then the justices all went public and said, well, this is the first time we're seeing the memo. What they didn't respond is to whether or not they knew about the memo. And it turns out in those depositions, and we find out later, yes, they did. So, you know, this is now where we're standing is as a result of that original conversation and story with Chris. And now we're talking about what did the justices know? When did they know it? We've got Judicial Discipline Commission, which is normally a very secretive and silent group, is being very vocal in trying to change the process because every bit of information they're trying to get is either being walked over with a snail or being denied outright for the evidence from the Judicial Department. So it's just been this really ridiculous public fight that has gone in front of this committee with the legislature trying to determine, all right, how do we change this process? Because it all falls under the Supreme Court's directive and oversight. And the only way to fix it, some people think, is to get it out from under there. And to do that, the voters of Colorado are likely going to be asked to pass a constitutional amendment.
Good. Good. And to some extent, Dave, we talked about this last time, this all traces back to your article, because the result of your article wasn't just the coverage and the release of the memo and all that, but now we have this group, and I don't know the official name of it, I can't remember, but they're looking at reforming the way in which there is judicial discipline. And those are the hearings. Go ahead.
They call themselves the Interim Legislative Committee on Judicial Discipline. There's 8 legislators. Quite surprisingly, you know, the latest events, too, that's chairman was Senator Pete Lee from Colorado Springs,
Yikes.
Who just got caught up in an indictment, grand jury indictment down there. So he stepped away from that chairmanship. And now it's Rep. Mike Wiseman out of Aurora.
Well, that's the birds of a feather. Anyway, I suppose if Pete Lee had been a judge, we wouldn't know about it. I'm kidding. A couple things about this that caused me concern. One is just as a regular taxpayer and participant in the criminal justice process. But the other is as just a guy who knows two of these justices who I have nothing but respect for. And I'm talking about Justice Carlos Zamora and Justice Brian Boatwright. I've known Brian 27, 28 years. I mean, he was my supervisor in county court back in Jefferson County. I, of course, tried a rather lengthy and complicated case in front of Judge Zamora. Those two are the best I've ever been in front of. I mean, they are fantastic judges, incredible wisdom, incredible knowledge, just very even-handed in the way they approached everything. So to have them get caught up in this makes me wonder, and I don't know if you can shed light on this, is this a function of folks that are looking out for themselves individually, the individual people involved here, or is this an institution that is desperate to just protect the institution?
If you listen and believe Chris Ryan, and there's a number of people who do, that's precisely what's happening. That regardless of what may have occurred with that contract, any investigation into the Supreme Court itself, the effort has been to protect the robes. So it has little to do with the specifics and much more to do with the process and the overall. That's Chris's 10,000-foot view. He was an insider, as he had said, and he trusted the process and understood the process. And he said, let me tell you, he told this to the committee this week, let me tell you, this is exactly how they work. So a number of folks will tell you that's what's happening. Boatwright, he's the Chief Justice, has said a number of times publicly that they are their efforts are to be transparent, bring confidence back to the judicial process and the judicial branch. As this whole thing moves along, I'm not quite sure we'll get to the ultimate end. I don't know. But there certainly raises many, many questions. Now, we still have at least 3 investigations going on out there. 2 of them for sure. 1 of them, we're not so sure. 2 of them for sure, that the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline. How deeply and up the chain that they're looking at this? Are they investigating particular justices, all the justices? I have no clue because by law, they can't talk about that. And then we have the Office of Attorney Regulation Counsel, which you've dealt with yourself as a practicing attorney.
Yep.
You pay your registration fees every year. They're the guys that regulate lawyers. They launched their investigation after I broke the stories in February of 21. And they hired an outfit out of Chicago. And that outfit has been pretty quiet, but as I, what little I understand, their primer was to take a look specifically at former Chief Justice Nathan Coates, Ben Coates. And how far and wide from that inquiry, I have no idea. And then the third one we heard about early on, and we haven't heard anything else, and that's very typical for the agency, and that's the FBI. How deeply they could go, I have no clue. And I haven't seen a bump in the road saying that they're still working on this in many, many months. So I have no idea where they're at. So those are the three that I'm aware of that still exist.
David Magoya from the Gazette. Last question for you. In one of the columns, or one of the, I'm sorry, the articles that you wrote, you were discussing that in regards to these reform efforts, there were a number of groups that came forward and all supported the idea of needing to make changes. One thing I got from that article was they're not all unanimous about what those changes ought to be, but there was one group that came out and said, nothing to see here, everything's great.
That's true. That was the Colorado Judicial Institute. They do a lot of training for Colorado's judges. They're a nonprofit outfit. They're closely connected with the Supreme Court. Two Supreme Court members are member emeritus directors of that group. And there are a couple of appellate court judges that are on their board of directors. They said all the investigations didn't find anything. Don't forget, these were investigations, Chris Ryan says, were wholly controlled by the Judicial Department. They got to see them. They got to provide the information and et cetera. Now, the two investigative groups, the Bob Troyer Group and Investigations Law Group, both very fine companies, had said there was no undue influence from the judiciary. So our findings are completely independent. But CJI, the Judicial Institute, said, nope, nothing to see. They didn't find any quid pro quo. So let's move on and no changes needed. However, they did say that if anything, had to change, and this is where all the groups seem to be uniform, is a greater transparency to the judicial discipline process. More specifically, right now, if a judge is charged with a misdeed, that charge is not public. The only time it's public is once they adjudicate the whole thing internally and then make a recommendation, the commission, to the Supreme Court to be public, and the Supreme Court agrees to make it public. That's when we get to see it. What they're talking about changing is at the filing of formal charges. Do understand, however, that sometimes judges get disciplined for their behavior that we will still not get to see. For instance, in the memo, it talks about this hairy-chested judge rubbing his chest on an employee.
Why wouldn't we get to know that? Why wouldn't we get to know that?
He got a private admonition because that happens when they're investigating the charges, and it seems pretty clear he's going to get tied up in it. And that's when they start negotiating, whatever it is, discipline that they think is proper without going, full tilt. So as long as that is allowed to keep happening, the public, and more importantly, the judicial performance commissions don't get to find out about it. These are the commissions that review judges' performance to recommend to voters for retention. I've got a story coming this weekend about this.
Unbelievable.
And it just seems to me, as a voter, I mean, come on, shouldn't I know how good or bad this guy is in whatever discipline conduct he's got? But even the performance review guys never get to know about the
unbelievable.
Listen, the discipline.
I think you can have as many private admonitions as you want in your own private law firm. But when you're occupying a position of such great power and discretion that's paid for by taxpayers, to say that they shouldn't get to know some of this stuff, especially after it's been investigated and founded, that runs afoul of this idea of transparency. I think there needs to be more than transparency in just this judicial discipline thing, but across the board. Still, I think what folks need to understand is it is the judicial branch that decides what information it's going to give over to the public. There is no outside body that can tell the courts you are wrong, you are going to turn this over. It is them, and they hold that power unto themselves, and they would probably fight to the death to keep from giving it up. That just doesn't make any sense.
The Attorney General's office actually stepped up. There was a little bit of a brouhaha between the Discipline Commission and the Supreme Court in trying to obtain documents, so they subpoenaed them. and the attorney general says, apparently representing the judicial department, says you don't have the right to subpoena. And I think if you fought this in court, our client, the Supreme Court, would actually uphold.
Isn't that offensive? Isn't that offensive? I mean, come on, man. How is that? How is that Democratic control or even a republic when you have a branch deciding all the rules for itself, and the only place you can go to complain about those rules are the people that made them?
The branch.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, David, I am certain we're going to have you on again. David McGoy, super reporter from the Gazette. Honest to God, the reporting is making changes in the law in an entire branch of government. That is that's something you got to take a little bit of pride in.
You know, we just try to report the news, and if people are good enough to read it deeply enough and think things need to change, then that's always appreciated. But, you know, my job is just to let folks know what's going on. If things come from that, you know, yeah, I mean, it's gratifying. I've been at this a long time, but, you know, I don't make those decisions, and I just keep reporting what I know, and, you know, hopefully things come from it.
Well, for the beating that your profession has taken over the years, and by the way, lawyers also, but to need a reminder as to the value of a vigorous fourth branch, if you will, the press, a free and well-funded and vigorous press, this is one of those examples. And you should know, too, I'm getting texts as we talk about this thing. So appreciate reporters like David McGoy, other folks saying, this is terrific. We need more of this. So just to let you know.
Well, I think, you know, it's nice to hear that, George. But I've always said that my profession, and I've been a journalist now 40 years, has taken its beatings, and not unjustifiably. You know, the critical thing to remember in journalism, it has to be responsible journalism, because there's a great deal of irresponsible journalism out there. And I think for those reporters that are very good at what they do, taking an unfair hit, branding all of us with the same mark, you know, that's not right. I think readers get to know reporters over time. Myself included, I've been here in Denver for 25 years. Folks know and know what to expect from my work. And I take great pride in that. But again, we have to be really careful in what we do and try to be as precise as we can. Sometimes we don't do it all the time, but we try as best as we can. So I appreciate folks recognizing that my profession is still important to all of us.
Dave McGoya from the Denver and Colorado Springs Gazette. Have a great weekend, man. I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thanks much. I was talking to your guy, Bill, man. Soccer starts, Spanish soccer this weekend. I'm excited.
Yeah, soccer and snakes. Hopefully you guys aren't talking about the snakes.
And Aaron Judge is going to break the home run record. You watch. I'm excited.
I want to see it. You know, I want to see it. They can't be dropping, though, 8 out of 10, man. I don't know what's going on with them.
No, I got to tell you. But you gotta love a guy that says, you know, contract, what are you talking about? I'm about to show you what you need to do for me.
Oh, I know.
It's pretty cool. I mean, you know, he's stepping it up. It's
he's
fun.
Crushing it. Every year should be a negotiation year for these guys. I think they'd all play better.
That I don't dispute that. I'm still an old school guy that says that's why I like the PGA golf. Now, I'm not a big fan of this LIV thing. But the PGA golf and tennis, you win, you make money. You lose, you go home.
Yeah, I love
it. I mean,
that.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. We'll talk more Yankees here coming up. Thank you very much for that phone call. What a great interview. Great reporter. And I think you can see why what he does matters here. It is making changes across the state. Listen, we'll cut away for a quick break, and we'll come back at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to be joined by Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams. You talk about doing something that's involving transparency, cutting edge stuff. You're going to hear about it first on the radio right here. It's already starting to catch fire across media. I love the idea. George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you just in time to tell you that at the top of the hour, we are going to have Sheriff Steve Reams from Weld County with a fantastic plan he's starting to unroll. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.